Good morning, everybody, and welcome. This is Turning Towards Life with Lizzie and Justin. We're here again. It's Sunday morning in London, and it's very, very sunny. It's the beginning of June, and Justin, I feel like the summer's suddenly here or something. I think it's going to be 20 degrees today or something, and for anybody who lives in the UK knows it's quite a treat. So I can feel hopefulness and mischief in me as we begin in this. And Justin, I just want to say thank you for bringing another excellent source. And the thing I realize is that the kind of sources you bring are just so not the kind of sources that come into my world. So I feel so stretched and strengthened and put into different things by the things that you choose and the things that you read. So I'm really, really grateful for that today. And very grateful for everyone listening and all of the messages we've been receiving from doing this as well. It's very moving to me. So I think that is everything I want to say by way of a good morning. And just thank you everybody for being with us, and thank you to Justin for you always being here as well.
Thanks, Lizzie. It's such a joy to be here. Welcome, good morning everyone. Welcome. It's fun, this, isn't it, Lizzie, the different sources we find. I think that's part of the joy of this, is what comes into our worlds is different because of the different histories we have and the different bodies we have and the different set of relationships each of us are in and the interests we've had and all of that. So this, for any of you who are just new with us, we always begin with a source, a piece of text, some writing of some kind, and you can always find it in our Facebook group, and you can find it in the notes to the podcast, and you can find it, all of them, on our very lovely turningtowards.life website, which has all 295, I think this is, sources and the conversations that go with them. But I also want to say something about this one, which is that this from Ian McGilchrist, who has written a couple of very wonderful books, is from a talk that he gave some years ago that somebody sent to me, and it's just a little excerpt from it. And if any of you who are with us would like a copy of the whole talk, you can email us, Justin at, or Lizzie at, or even better, hello at turningtowards.life. Drop us a note and we'll send you the whole thing. And then you can see where this comes from. Be really, really pleased to share that with you. And as you're saying, Lizzie, it's also a wonderful way that people sometimes get in contact with us and say, here's what happened from listening to this conversation, or how this meant something to me, or we love hearing from you. So please feel very welcome to be in contact with us. It's a great joy for us to be in a, not just this conversation that involves so many people because so many of you are with us listening or watching, but also to actually be in conversation with you is a joy for us, and very welcome. So this is A Kind of Attention by Ian McGilchrist. It goes like this. Everything that exists is made up of the same set of particles. What makes the difference between you, a tree, and a boiled egg is just the relationship of the particles to one another. The meaning comes not from the particles, the bits which are in themselves undifferentiated, meaningless, but from the relationship between them. The most moving piece of music you ever heard is just a collection of meaningless notes from one point of view. And from the other, the meaning arises from the relationship which makes the melody, the harmony, and so on. And so it is with everything in life we value. Its meaning comes from relationship with your loved ones, the place where you belong, your friends, the natural world itself, a work of art, a poem, or a symphony. It all lies in relationships, not things themselves. When we see the world with targeted, narrow beam attention, it's just a meaningless heap of things to be grabbed. And when we see the world as a whole, with a broad, open attention, its meaning and richness come to meet us. When Hamlet said, "There's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so," he didn't mean that we can make up our own ethics as we go along. I believe what he meant was that how you choose to think of, to regard, to attend to anything in this world is a moral act. is a moral act because it changes what it is you find there, and it changes you yourself. A certain attitude, a kind of attention to others and the world at large, can make you and them and the world flourish. Another kind can enslave, reduce, and destroy everything around us, all the good we live for.
Everything that exists is made up of the same set of particles. What makes the difference between you, a tree, and a boiled egg is just the relationship of the particles to one another. The meaning comes not from the particles, the bits, which are themselves undifferentiated, meaningless, but from the relationship between them. The most moving piece of music you ever heard is just a collection of meaningless notes from one point of view. From the other, the meaning arises from the relationship, which makes the melody, the harmony, and so on. And so it is with everything in life we value. Its meaning comes from relationship with your loved ones, the place where you belong, your friends, the natural world itself, a work of art, a poem, or a symphony. It all lies in relationships, not in things themselves. When we see the world with targeted narrow beam attention, it is just a meaningless heap of things to be grabbed. When we see the world as a whole with broad open attention, its meaning and richness comes to meet us. When Hamlet said, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so," he didn't mean that we can make up our own ethics as we go along. I believe what he meant was that how you choose to think of, to regard, attend to anything in this world is a moral act, because it changes what it is that you find there, and it changes you yourself. A certain attitude, a kind of attention to others and the world at large, can make you and them and the world flourish. Another kind can enslave, reduce, and destroy everything around us, all the good we live for.
Thanks, Lizzie. There's so much to talk about in here, but I have to say that it made me smile when I read and you read that the difference between you, a tree, and a boiled egg is just the relationships. I think it's such a lovely, lovely choice of examples. Last night, we had some cousins of mine round for dinner, very, very dear people to us who we haven't seen for a long time. And it was such a joy to be with them. And one of the things that we got talking about as we were catching up after actually a long time of absence from one another because of the pandemic, we hadn't really seen one another, Lizzie, was we were talking about the kind of work that you and I do. And we got talking also about what it has been like to host our PCC, our professional coaching course, on Zoom for these last few years, having been for years meeting together in body and in person. And I was saying how often it is when we do that, and when we begin something, that people say to us, I had no idea it was possible to feel so intimate, so connected, so present with other people, with technology in between us. I've got used to this being a kind of deeply reducing kind of activity where I feel exhausted and belittled and nothinged. And here I got to feel human. Mm-hmm. And we got talking about this and about how it's not the technology. It's such a great place to explore exactly what Ian McGilchrist is talking about, because it's not the technology itself. It's not as you and I are doing now. It's not having a screen and the internet and all of that, you know, wonder between us. That turns us into some kind of flattened, shallowed, exhausted object. It's actually the kind of attention we bring to one another. And I was saying how often when we begin something where we gather people on Zoom, we really practice together slowing down and really looking and feeling and receiving each person, so that instead of there being an array of rectangles which happen to have faces in that might just be flickering images on a screen for each of us, we start to see Lizzie arrive and Justin arrive and Nina arrive and Sam arrive, and I know that in doing that, in this strange environment, which is just one example of the thing that Ian McGilchrist is talking about, where we love this sentence that a certain attitude and a kind of attention to others and the world at large. Actually, that's not what I wanted. It all lies in the relationships, not in the things themselves. And how you choose to attend to anything in this world is a moral act. Oh, that's what I was looking for. Because it changes what it is that what and who it is that you find there and who you are yourself. And right there in that experience, I know it's true. That we can gather using Zoom, and it can be like sitting at a great distance from a bunch of objects and feeling distance from ourselves, or it can feel the most intimate, connected, open, welcoming, presencing, and it's all to do with how we choose to attend.
Mm.
And the whole world changes on it, as does when you look into the eyes of your child and treat them as a extraordinary, growing, blooming being to be taken care of and to be supported and guided and welcomed, or when you look into the eye, maybe look at a child as a nuisance or a distraction or an annoyance or a colleague or a loved one or a lover or a person serving the coffee in the coffee shop, or like in every one of those situations, what Ian McGilchrist says is true. Every single one of them. And one of the reasons I think it's so important, I was speaking to, this isn't about Zoom, Lizzie, I'm just using it as an example, but I was speaking to someone I know who was was in a meeting with, they were talking about something really, really important with 40 other people, and they were all on a bit of technology, and people had their cameras off, and other people were tapping their emails. And he said to me how exhausting and how dispiriting it was.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, there is a place we see it so easily there, where we're turning ourselves into and other people into objects. And that has been the drift of so much of the world, has been to encourage us to do that. And so it takes someone like Ian McGilchrist to say, this is so important. This is how the entire world gets made. Mm. A world in which we get to flourish, or a world in which we enslave one another, is built here with the kind of attention we bring. God, I'm so grateful that he's prepared to write that and say that to us, because it's also probably the thing that most of the time is most invisible to us until we actually notice that how we attend makes the world. It's sort of like it's a marginal thing, but actually we're attending or not attending all the time, whether or not we're prepared to admit it or own up to it or look at it.
Mm. Yeah, as you're talking, Justin, that's exactly what's happening for me, is I'm realizing just how obscured the way I'm paying attention, or what my relationship is to people and things. Unless I become conscious of that, I've got no idea, in a way. Like, I'm just living, I'm just carrying on whatever got given me or something. I'm just being the thing that's given to me. And then as you're talking, I can see also how hard it is to know what my relationship is to things. Like, I notice as you were talking, I was thinking, oh God, so what is my relationship? You know, I guess I talk quite a lot about this because I have a young one in my house at the moment, being my sweet and wonderful daughter. And she, when you ask me, you know, what's my relationship to her? Like, what am I thinking of her? What am I thinking about her? Who do I think she is? You know, all of that stuff. There's so much information there, but unless I stop and ask myself that question, I wouldn't be able to give you the answer, if you know what I mean. Like, it would take some introspection to really understand what my actions, where my actions are coming from. So the fact that most mornings for about 10 minutes, I thank her for about 100 things. in this moment I'm realizing tells me something about what I take her to be, how I'm in relationship with her. But unless I think about that, all I'm doing is just saying thank you for 100 things. So then as you're asking this question, as Ian McGilchrist is asking this question around attention and relationship too, it's also quite confounding to try and answer that question. Like I notice even in this moment, it's hard for me to go, well, so what's my relationship to Vesper? If that's what I'm doing is thanking her. I guess it's something about, I think I'm holding her as a place to receive from. I think that's one of the main principles of who I am in relationship to her, is that I feel like she's an opportunity for me to receive life and to receive being and to receive the nature of her spirit and life force. And so because I'm receiving her, I have to say thank you, because that's the obvious act that comes out of being somebody who wants to receive another person, which, as you say, is a very different relationship too than it's a burden or it's difficult or nuisance, I think was the word that you used, or whatever. But it takes a bit for me to really like dig deeper as to where my actions are coming from, so that I can see what my relationship is to someone or something. And I feel quite thrown into the oh my goodnessness of, wow, asking this and stopping, as you're saying, even with technology, just stopping with my own technology of my own life, stopping and asking myself those questions feels really, really vital. Like, what on earth am I doing if I don't do that? Basically kind of blundering through my life with a habitual set of responses that I don't even have a chance to make meaning, really, or find value, because I don't really know what I'm doing. So I'm feeling like Ian McGilchrist is talking about my eyes are awake, but I could be completely asleep to what I'm doing, what I'm creating, what I'm making so in the world by the actions I take because of the way that I'm relating.
When I'm listening to you, Lizzie, I find myself coming back to the place that I often do, I think, as I think about this, which is about what the wider cultures which we get exposed to teach us about this, and what we must do in order to find some alternatives to it. Because I think that I think for anybody who lives in a 20, you know, mid, where are we? Not mid yet, early 21st century capitalist economy, the act of attention that brings the depth of something forward, or the depth of someone, or their extraordinariness, or the beauty in something, or the completeness of something as it is not greatly encouraged. What we've mostly been encouraged to do is to treat things as, and people as object, and ourselves as objects to manipulate so that we can fit into whatever structures there are. But also we've been, I think, really, really strongly encouraged to be afraid and to feel lack everywhere. Like there's a something that always needs to be, something is missing and it needs to be filled, and it can't be met with what's here, because, and that's what keeps the whole system going. And it's why there are so many organizations and so many workplaces that are built around keeping people afraid, and why we get so desperate, and why we feel like we have to go faster all the time, and because we're not attending. It's a little bit like what Ian McGilchrist says at the beginning is the difference between attending to the most moving piece of music you ever heard as meaningful, or as a sequence of meaningless notes, and I've got to grab something. I'm not. And I think this grabbing, grasping, fearful, making everything into a thing way, for many of us, is the predominant thing that our culture gives us. But we can't, it's not easy to see it, because nobody's saying we're teaching you to treat everything as a thing. Mm. It's sort of implied in so many places. It's implied. And I remember, so many places where I felt really not now, but for years of my life, feeling shamed and ashamed of wanting to attend in the way that you were just describing about with Vespa, wanting to really take something or somebody in, wanting to really feel the depth of the one who's here and the depth of myself and the slowing down that sometimes takes. And this feeling in me, the parts of me that tell me, no, I should always be in a hurry. There are always things to do. And that's the, so many of us swim in a sea that it's not just a neutral thing that we're choosing one kind of attention to another. We're being actively encouraged not to attend in the way that you were just describing. And this amazing line in McGilchrist, which is that how you choose to attend changes what it is that you find there. It's not just like a filter or something. If I am with you in a way that makes it possible for the you that you are, with all of your depth and beauty and wonder, and to come forward, you are different in my presence than if I attend to you as an annoying object to be manipulated and moved around. And it's the same with a tree or a teacup or the sun or a piece of art, or that our attention actually changes what we find. And if we could know that early enough in our lives, and some people are lucky enough to have the people around them to teach them this, if we haven't learned it early, if we can discover it as soon as we can, we can start to bring out so much of the world that we long for is right here and available to us. And then we wouldn't have to be so frantic, and we wouldn't have to be so desperate, and we wouldn't have to be so fearful, and we wouldn't have to grasp all the time. And then we would also, I think we would do the things that matter, not all the peripheral things that don't matter very much at all, but which we think matter. And I feel like what I move to do in because of this conversation is to keep on teaching myself that how, and others, that how we attend is the first and biggest choice that we have, from which everything else flows. Mm-hmm. And it's the most invisible thing.
Yeah. I can so feel, as you're talking, Justin, all these examples are coming into my head of who I am around different people, and also who others are around other people that I hear about. You know, even I remember at school, who my teacher was had such a profound impact on whether I learned anything or not, or whether I was mischievous, or whether I was just basically disruptive, or whether I was interested, or whether I was. So different parts of me would come forth depending on who the person was that was in a position of power in the system. And obviously that's with reflection that I can see that. At the time it was just, you know, a bunch of responses or whatever, but I can see, and now too, like what I bring to you is like who I become with you is very different than who I become with, I don't know, lots of other people. And it feels very clear and obvious as we're talking that that's, I can feel my own experience of that being true, that we all show up in relationship to who's in front of us. So we've been talking in my family recently around, I think we've spoken about this here before as well, Justin, like, let me be a person to whom the truth is told. Not let me be a person to whom a tiny little slither of life comes my way because of all my reactions to everything that you say, meaning you can only really be this much of yourself. and however hard it is to feel into and to welcome the things that trigger me or feel I can feel my reactivity to, I want to be able to regulate myself in the moment so that even if I am thinking, oh my God, I can't believe you just said that, I can at least keep my mouth closed and nod with a smile on my face so that at least my body is saying, I do want to know. It's just that I'm finding it difficult to know, but I do want to know, and I want to be safe so that everything could be revealed to me. Like, that's what I really want to be, because I see at the moment so many young people in particular aren't telling anybody in authority what's happening for them because of the narrow receipt. This line that Ian says about when we see the world with targeted narrow beam attention, I feel like when we are in a position of power in some way, like we're older than, or we have, or we're a parent, or in a system where we have power over somebody in decision making or whatever, if we come as the narrow beam, we're never going to be able to be an open presence that receives what's here. We're only going to be allowing people to tell us what could fit through my narrow beam. And then we're never going to know the truth of anything. And so when young people feel that everybody's a narrow beam, then I've been feeling into the loneliness of, I can't tell anyone anything because everyone's cross with me, or everyone thinks I'm irresponsible, or everyone thinks that I'm wrong, or everyone thinks there's something wrong with me. And I can't take that. So I'm just going to keep it quiet, and I'm not going to share it with anyone, and I'm not going to get any help with anything. And that feels really heartbreaking to me, that there's all this internalized loneliness because everybody around is a narrow beam. And I really need them to be paying attention in a way that you're talking about, Justin, that allows me to come here with everything I've got. Like, what do I need to do to become a person to whom people can come and they can bring everything that's here, and that I can welcome it all and breathe and allow it and be open? Because otherwise, on the other end of the narrow beam is like a whole world of goodness knows what, and all I'm allowing through is this tiny little slither of it, which for me makes my world a tiny sliver of a world, and for them makes their world completely uncommunicable, because my beam is so narrow that I can't even receive the thing that they're trying to tell me, or be still enough and open enough and gentle and soft enough that it would even come towards me.
And there is why, in everything that you've said, is why the kind of attention to others and the world at large can make us and them and the world flourish, and another kind can enslave, reduce, and destroy everything. There it is, and it's in how often young people get treated by adults with power, but it's also how adults get treated by other adults with power. And it's how we treat one another when we're afraid, and it's how whole systems, healthcare systems of justice, systems of work, systems of government, systems of education become the ones that enslave, reduce, and destroy us, or the ones that have us and them and the world flourish. Mm. The last thought I've got, Lizzie, is, I mean, I've got, it's not the last thought I've got, but, and this is a much bigger conversation, that it's not just about how we think about things, it's about how soft and welcoming we can be, it's about how we regulate our own nervous systems, and how we allow our bodies to attend, and it's about how we treat all the ones inside each of us as well, so that we're bringing our wide openness, not our all of our protective parts narrowing, and making the world the attention targeted and narrow and trying to grab, but broad and open. Is there's inner work and outer work to do, but I suppose it starts first with the willingness to say, yes, I'm I'm willing to pay it. I'm willing to look at this. I'm willing to notice. I'm willing to learn what it takes for me to be this broad, open attention so that meaning and richness of everything and everyone can come to meet us.
Yeah. And my closing thought, Justin, is about how empowering this feels, especially when we feel lost and quite profound meaninglessness about things. That there's a way we can be in relationship to the world. It's like, it's not an absolute. You know, I think sometimes I've been this whole thing of, oh, well, everything's meaningless. And so I've just got to make the best of this or something. But this is an invitation to say, no, this is just what the world is made of. This is just how it goes, which is that we make the world. I'm making up my world by the way I pay attention. And of course, I have an endless capacity as a being, this kind of being, to pay all kinds of different attention to all kinds of different things. So I feel like I could be a builder rather than a bystander or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really grateful for that feeling.
Oh, what a joy to be in this conversation with you, Lizzie, and to attend together this way. And so thank you for always being here as one, certainly for me, who gives me the space to be here in the widest form. And thank you, everyone, all of you who are with us. We are very, very grateful to be in this conversation with you. And if you are finding that this is of value to you and you know other people who would benefit, please feel very, very welcome to tell other people about this. You can always find us, search for Turning Towards Life and all the different podcast places, or come to turningtowards.life, or head over to thirdspace.org, which is the something that gave birth to all of this, and you can connect with us that way. And all being well, we will be back for another conversation next Sunday, and we'll see you then.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.